Well, hi everybody. Welcome to the last session of the last day of Build. Thanks so much for sticking around. Thanks so much for coming out to this. Hope you're having a great time this week. Did you learn a lot? Did you see a lot of cool things?
Yeah.
All right. I'll take that as a resounding yes. Anybody not see anything they liked? I'm not going to ask you if you saw anything you didn't like. I just want to know if you didn't see anything at all. All right, my name is Robert Green. I'm a technical evangelist in the Developer and Platform Evangelism Group. My focus is on line of business, and we are here today for tips for building line of business apps for the Windows Store. And this is kind of the continuation of the conversation. I did this talk at the previous Build back in the fall, and so what I've done is kind of kept the same, some of the same topic areas, but rather than just repeat the talk, I'm kind of moving the conversation along. So I guess that's kind of my goal for talks like this. So what I want to talk about are some design considerations, particularly when it comes to building store line of business apps for Windows 8. Then I want to talk about some new things in the development space. And I think what I'll wind up doing is kind of pushing the deployment stuff to the end, because there's really nothing new. There's really nothing new to talk about on deployment. So for deployment, we may probably be best served by just me answering your questions towards the end. And also, my good friends from SAP are going to come up and show us what they've been doing around line of business apps and share their experiences. And I really want to make sure that I don't take their time away from them. I've been practicing this talk, I've been paring it down, and I think I've pretty much got it to the 40 minutes that I'm allotted, and so I want to make sure that I don't eat into their time. So, let's begin. From design considerations, what do we think of UI-wise when we think about traditional line of business applications? And I went into the archives and got this classic example of a line of business app. And what do we see here? We see some common patterns, like the more data the better. So cram as much information as we possibly can onto this screen using small fonts, and if it doesn't all fit, the user can just scroll backwards and forwards. We see menus and toolbars all over the place for navigation. There are lots of actions that you take in a line of business app. You know, you go to a blog app and your action is swipe and tap to read. There's really only two or three actions you take. In a line of business app, you're adding, you're saving, you're deleting, you're validating, you're printing, you're generating reports over and over. So you're going to have lots of actions, which means lots and lots of buttons or links. And we have a concept that I like to call design once, run anywhere. In other words, I design the app on my computer, on my 19-inch monitor, and then I give it to all of you guys to run, and if you have a 22-inch monitor, I'm not going to take advantage of that extra space. Too bad, you get the same window. And if you're running on a smaller window, too bad, you got to scroll left and right or do more scrolling up and down. I write it once, I give it out, I'm done. Even if we move to a more modern design, we see the same patterns. So here, small fonts fitting in lots of data. We've got tabs to move from section to section. We don't have buttons, but we have links for doing things like adding phone, adding employee. And in the middle pane, they're up there in the upper right, but in the right pane, they're in the middle. They're all over the place. You know, they could be anywhere. So this is what our users are used to, and this is what we're used to building. And of course, we're going to continue to build desktop line of business applications, but we're going to increasingly move to building line of business apps for Windows 8 and take advantage of the Windows runtime. We're going to do this to take advantage of mobile scenarios. We're going to do this because there are many cases where we can get a big productivity increase by redesigning the app and making it fast and fluid and taking advantage of the modern UI principles. And also, there are cases where we can make the app more productive and more useful by taking advantage of some of the features of Windows 8 and 8.1. So what we're going to do, and thanks to the SAP guys, particularly Fred, for giving me this slide. He said you wanted props. There are your props. So we're going to move from this world of data-centric apps into a world where we build more immersive apps. And here's an excellent example of a line of business app. This is SAP's Customer Financial Fact Sheet. They're going to come up and talk about it a little bit more. You see, it looks and feels like a Windows Store app. There are my customers, and if I want to view a customer, rather than cramming all of the data into a single page and using small fonts, what we do is spread it out over the page and then let the user scroll back and forth and view data as they want. So this is an excellent example. We're going to see another couple ones in the demos of serving up the same information that the users want to see in the more modern, more immersive fashion. So as we're building line of business apps, what are some of the things we want to keep in mind? We want to ask ourselves, how do we keep the design clean? This goes by a number of names, content over Chrome, fast and fluid, but we need to keep asking ourselves, how do we do that? How do we keep the design clean? How do we provide for navigation in a world where we don't have menus, we don't have toolbars? What do we do with actions? You're still going to have the same number of actions. You're still going to need to add, delete, edit, save, etc. When do you use canvas buttons? When do you use app bars? When do you use links? Hyperlinks are kind of new now in XAML in 8.1. And then how can we use live tiles and secondary tiles to make the app more productive and more useful to the users? So let's go take a look at some of these concepts. Okay. So first, let's go in and look at an expense report app. This is a sample that I wrote. It's on CodePlex. If you want to get the code, myexpenses.codeplex.com. And when you first come in, what I decided on this app is it should be immediately useful to you. So I kind of sort of duplicated live tiles in here in that I've got charges. I get to see all of the charges that I have outstanding. I get to see reports that I've started but haven't completed. Those are saved reports. I get to see reports that I have submitted but my manager hasn't approved yet. And then I can go view past reports. Now, if I want to look at charges, so what do we do for navigation? I come in, I see this information, I want to see charges, I tap charges. I pause for dramatic effect. And there are my charges. I want to see information on this charge. I tap, there's the charge. So the first navigation is just tapping. If I want to go back, then I just press the back button. Don't need toolbars, don't need menus. It's pretty straightforward and pretty clear that to go view information, I just kind of drill down on it. Okay. Now, if I want to view additional information, let's go look at past reports, for example. What I've done here is I've got all my past reports, and I'm using nice big blocks in this grid view, right? And I've got a decent sized font there. And if I want to see additional months, additional reports, I can just scroll backwards and forwards. And of course, if I want to go view one, I tap on it, there's the information. If I want to see information on that, I just tap. Okay? So here for the past reports, my primary navigation mechanism is scrolling. Now the question is, when do I get tired of scrolling? Is it 2 swipes? Is it 3? Is it 10? That's a very good question. What if I don't want to swipe over and over again? I've got about 24 expense reports in here. What if I had 150? I don't know that I necessarily want to swipe over and over again to get towards the end. So what I added here, I took advantage of, is semantic zoom. I pinch in. And now I bubble this up to the year. So now I can see by year what years I have available and also show how many reports I have for each. And now if I want to go view 2011 or 2012, then I tap. Okay. You can also do filtering. You could have a filter button to show by year. That's another way to do it. Okay. Now if I want to go view charges, so now by default I go back, or if I'm in charges and I want to go view past reports or something, I go back. So a lot of in, out, a lot of down, back up to the main page. Or what I can do is take advantage of a navigation bar. So in XAML, this is done through an app bar. In JavaScript, there's a new nav bar control. And we'll hope to see that soon in XAML. So what I do here is I have icons that represent the various sections. And now if I want to go see saved reports, I go straight to saved reports. If I want to see pending reports, I go to pending reports. If I want to go back to the home page, I go to the home page. So all of the navigation's in there, all of the functionality is in there, but this is a very clean design. It's very fast and fluid. It's very easy to get to the information you're looking for. So this is a good example of how to keep the clean design and stick to the design guidelines while also serving up all the information that people need. Now, what about buttons? Right? We have not yet seen a button. It's because I haven't yet actually taken an action. So if I go into charges and I select this, now the app bar comes up with the ability to select all or create a new charge, so the global commands go on the right, or to add this to report, or clear the selection on the left. Okay, so now, let's say I want to create a new charge. I come in, and the way I've written this, if you change your mind, you tap the back button, but if you actually want to save this charge, then I put the save button in the app bar. And to be perfectly honest with you, I think that's wrong. I actually, a while ago, started thinking that was wrong. And if we look at the calendar app, I think they got it exactly right. Swipe up, press new. There's only two things you're going to do with this appointment. You're either going to save it, so there's a save button in the upper right, or you're going to cancel it. Now, interestingly, and I noticed this for the first time last night, in the 8.0 version of this app, there was a save button and an X next to it. For 8.1, they've moved over to the back button, just like I'm doing it. I'll say that I had that first in my app. Pretty sure the calendar guys leveraged and borrowed that from me. That's okay. We're on the same team. But I think this is actually the right way to do it. And the next time I get around to updating this application, I'm absolutely going to move that save button onto the canvas so that it's there and you don't have to swipe up. Okay? So the first thing you should do is get familiar with the guidelines and then, to the extent possible, to the extent feasible, follow them. Now the question is, should the save button be in the app bar or should it be on the canvas bar? In this example, I think it should be on the canvas because you're always going to use it, but the best way to answer these types of questions is to involve the users. What buttons do they think should be in the canvas? What buttons do they think should be in the app bar? If they tell you, why do I have to swipe to do this? I do this all the time. That's a good candidate to put on the canvas. If there's a button you put on the canvas that they kind of never use, that's a good candidate to put into the app bar. Okay. All right, so next. I said that one of the reasons that we want to build apps on the WinRT is to take advantage of some of the functionality that's built into the platform. And a couple ones that I think can be particularly useful in line of business applications are tiles and notifications. So we know what tiles are. You go to your start screen, there's a tile, there's rich, there's engaging content. And the content gets updated even if the app's not running. And then notifications can be used to give users relevant, time-sensitive, good information. Excellent things to be able to put into your apps, but there's a couple things to keep in mind. The first is that the user can turn these off. The user can turn off your live tiles. The user can decide that your app doesn't have permission to send them notifications. So if you're relying on that, there may be an issue. So just keep in mind that the user's in control of that. In terms of notifications, we have a number of notifications. And I think there was a session on that this week, so definitely for the mechanics of that, go take a look at that. We've got local, we've got scheduled, we've got periodic, and we've got push. And the important thing to remember about push is that push notification, if you're using WPS, or the WNS, the Windows Push Notification Services, is that they do require your app to be registered in the store. So for enterprise side-loaded applications, you're not at this time able to rely on that. So just keep that in mind. Okay, so tiles. Let's take a look at that. And what's the big deal there? I give a fair number of briefings on Windows 8 at Microsoft, and I always mention the tiles, and I always show the tiles, and it resonates pretty much all of the time. Now, if you think about the desktop is a picture and some icons on it, and the icons tell you things you can go do. Double tap here, and I'll open Word and show you a document. Double tap here, and I'll open up Excel, show you a spreadsheet. But it's not giving you any information. The tiles on the start screen are giving you information. Now, of course, from the consumer side, that's great. I can see the weather. I can see what emails I'm getting. I can see what my next appointment is. I used to be able to see if there were apps that needed to be updated in the store. Now in 8.1, that happens automatically, so the store is not going to show you those numbers anymore. But if you think about it, on the line of business side, we can do the same thing. So this expense report app is showing me how many charges I have. It can show me how many expense reports are waiting my approval. We can have an app that tells us what productivity is. We can have the tile in the app refresh on a regular basis and show us what percentage of the machines are running or what percent capacity our refineries running at. Any information that you can go query, you can stick in the tile, and therefore it's available to the user when they run the application. And then you can also take advantage of secondary tiles. So a good example of that is this Push BI application, which does not have a live primary tile, but what it has are the secondary tiles. So if I launch this app, when you start it up, it's showing demo data, but you can hook it up to your backends, SQL Server reporting services, a number of other backends, and get business intelligence information. And again, they use, you can scroll these individual ones, but you can scroll back and forth and see information. The major things I'm looking at, social, which could be Yammer, Twitter, what are our customers saying about us, what are we saying about our customers. And then we've got the favorite KPIs. So if I tap one of these, then I drill in and look at it. If I swipe up in the app bar, let's pick one that I haven't already pinned. If I swipe up in the app bar, let's pick one that I haven't already pinned. There we go. I can pin this to the start screen and give it a name that I want. And then when I close the app, I wind up, I did a few last night just to save time. Notice that these three secondary tiles, one for availability, one for problem cure rate, one for sales revenue, are querying the server and updating themselves. So think about this. I turn on my machine, and before I've even finished my third cup of coffee, I see, oh, problem cue rate, it's red. Oh, snap, I wonder what's going on. I tap that, go directly to that spot in the app, and I'm able to check and see what's going on. As you probably know, when an app starts, it knows whether it started because you tapped the primary tile or it started because you tapped the secondary tile. When you create a secondary tile, you give it an ID. And when the app starts after tapping a secondary tile, you can find out which tile was tapped and then go directly to that spot in the app. So think about the productivity from this. Rather than just telling me, oh, here's an app, you can launch it, and then you can poke around and see what's going on. The app is now talking to me, giving me information. This is a feature unique to our platform, and you can think of all kinds of scenarios where it's amazingly helpful. It can save you tons of money, make your users happy, get you that big raise that you've been denied for so long, make you a hero. It's a pretty cool feature. Okay. As you know, Windows 8 is designed for multiple form factors, everything from tablets to laptops, ultrabooks, desktops. As you have all hopefully discovered firsthand this week, down to the 8-inch devices, and then you've seen the perceptive pixels. So everything from 8-inch to 80-inch and everything in between, it's Windows. And if you build an app, that app runs on all of these platforms. So gone, or hopefully gone, are the days of design once, run everywhere. What you really ought to do is think about what the app's going to look like and how the app's going to behave on different devices, because there's a very good chance that your users will be running it on multiple devices. Somebody gets one of those 8-inch Acers and decides they want to run the app on that. You need to think about that. What's the app going to do, particularly when it comes to presenting data? So you're still going to continue to use grid views and list views to display data, but what you want to do is avoid showing too much data at the same time. And I put that in quotes on purpose because that's a very subjective thing. How do you know it's too much? Ask the users. Involve the users. Get them involved in the usability studies. They'll tell you. Spread data across a wide page. So yes, it's great to have a font big enough for the users to be able to see, and then they just swipe, and there's a happy medium somewhere between a font that's so small it all fits on one page versus a font that's so big they have to get carpal tunnel and get tired halfway through the list. So somewhere there's the happy medium, and you'll play around with that. Another thing to consider doing is scaling down the UI to show more data and to avoid this excessive panning. So what I mean by that is we'll go in and look at the expense report app, and I'm going to pop into Visual Studio to run this. Okay, so when we run this app, here's the way I have past reports now. This is good, but you don't see an awful lot of information on the page. You got to do a lot of scrolling. So I said, yeah, you know, there's probably a better way to do this. So the first thing I did was I decided to just go to this. So to use a stylized list view and present this in a more tabular format. And what I was originally aiming for was something like this out of the weather app. The weather app does a really good job of it, but they've got way better designers than me. So I wound up with this flat, boring version. But anybody with some design skills could turn this into a much better looking view as well. So now it's a lot easier to scan through this information, and then if I just want to view one, as before, I tap on it and the same thing happens. Okay. So now I think about, well, what happens if I'm viewing this on a smaller device? So what I'm going to do is go find, so this, I'm going to collapse this. And then I'm going to make this one visible. And now what I'm going to, and I can detect this, I can detect the size of the screen. So what I can do is just shrink the font. This is still a very readable font size, but now all of these fit on the page. Okay? So absolutely play around with that. Play around with different size fonts. Play around with how much data gets shown on the screen. You could vary it based on the device. You could vary it based on user preferences. You could have the user decide when they want to scroll and have bigger fonts versus when they want to see everything in one spot. So absolutely have them. There's absolutely nothing in the guidelines that says thou shalt use one font always only. There is no reason you can't in your app provide the user three or four different ways of looking at this information. Okay. So that is what I want to say about design. I have at TechEd a few weeks ago, I did a longer version of this talk. So if you want to see more examples and hear me ramble on more about this, go check out my TechEd talk. Otherwise, this was a pretty good overview. Now let's talk about some programming issues. What do line of business apps do? Well, they typically work with data. So what do we need to know about working with data? Well, if you're connecting to corporate data, whether it's on-prems or in the cloud, there's nothing new. Windows Store apps connect to services in the exact same way, whether it's an ASMX web service, or it's a WCF service, or it's a WCF data service, or it's a web API. Whether it's sitting on-prems or in Azure, it doesn't matter. You go into Visual Studio, you right-click, you add service reference, we generate the proxy class for you, you go and you talk to it asynchronously, you're done. So good news there is that there's really nothing new to learn. It just works. which is awesome. There are other ways, of course, that you can talk to data. You can use the XHR stuff in JavaScript, but me being a C-sharp XAML guy, there's absolutely nothing new here. And anytime you move to a new platform and you get to not have to learn new things, we celebrate that. Now, what you might want to do is maintain a local copy of data to improve performance. And maybe you want to download the list of interest rates or download the list of sales reps or customers in a region or something. You've got a number of choices for that. You could use XML. You could use JSON. If you're building HTML apps, you could use IndexedDB. If you're building C-sharp VBXAML apps, you could use SQLite. You've got a number of options there. Pick the one you like. For offline scenarios, we like SQLite a lot. It works very well with Visual Studio. A lot of people have had success with that. And a large number of applications are using that. So people have had a lot of success with that. So we work with data. Another thing a line of business app we need to do is make sure that only the right people are using it. So how do we authenticate? Well, if it's a domain-joined machine, you just rely on Windows authentication, and Windows will pass along your domain credentials just like it does today. So really nothing new to think about there, but not all Windows 8 machines can be domain-joined. Now, in Windows 8.1, there's a new option for these RT devices, non-domain-joined devices, and that's to do a workplace join. Are people familiar with workplace join? Did you see that or hear about that? I don't know if there was a session on it. I know we talked about it at the keynote at Tech Ed. So basically what you do is you provide your enterprise credentials and then you're given access to SharePoint sites or the et cetera. It's kind of, I don't know, it's almost like a lightweight join. But because you had to supply your credentials, your Active Directory credentials, that's another thing that you can rely on. You can rely on the workplace join, and then the workplace join machine is authenticated and then could talk to internal resources. You can use smart cards and virtual smart cards. I showed an example of this last build, how to do that, how to plug in a smart card. The problem with that is you need to set up a certificate server, which is not a trivial task. And then you need to make sure that certificate server stays up and running. At Build last year, I was borrowing one that one of the test teams had, and then they took it down. And then I had a guy down the hall build one for me, and then that machine crashed. So you got to make sure that the server stays up and running. New in 8.1 is fingerprint authentication. There's a user consent verifier class in windows.security.credentials.ui, and so you could verify based on fingerprints, which is cool. There's also another cool thing, the ability to use Azure AD, so the Windows Azure Authentication Library can let you do Active Directory authentication in the cloud. I'm going to show you a demo of that. So all of these will work for your users, your employees. If you want your partners or vendors to be able to authenticate, then you could, of course, do some kind of custom credentials thing, but then you got to maintain your own database. If they forget their password, you're on the hook for resetting their password. Or you could use some architecture that already has all that, like a Microsoft account. Okay, that way, the user's in charge of resetting their password, Microsoft's in charge of maintaining the database. And I had an example of that last fall. But let's talk about something that's new, and that's the Azure Authentication Library that just came out, which makes it easy, it is easy, to add authentication using Active Directory, taking advantage of OAuth 2. It's packaged as a Windows runtime component, so you can use it from both XAML and HTML apps. And what it basically does is it wraps the web authentication broker, providing a single sign-on for using Active Directory, and then it caches those credentials using the credential vault. So let's take a quick look at that. And I had this last night, I had this working in this expense app, but then this morning it was completely broken. So what I'm going to do is show you a different example. There is an excellent walkthrough that talks about this and shows you how to do it on the Azure site. And I'll post a link to this When this talk goes up on Channel 9, I'll post a link to this. So what I did was I built this, and here's basically how it works. The first thing we did was we stood up a service. This is a web API service that is going to take care of not only the authentication, but also provide the API for retrieving and saving to-do list items. And then I'm going to run this application. It's just a Windows Store front end. And now I'm going to sign in against my AD credentials sitting up in Azure. And it's going to work particularly well if I type everything correctly. And now what we're doing is going out to Azure AD, authenticating me. And now I can add things to my to-do list. And I've been authenticated using Azure Active Directory. The code to do this is really quite straightforward. Let's look at the code that I had to add to the client app. Okay, I got to know my domain name. I need to know the client ID. I need to know where the service is. I use HTTP client, then I get a new authentication context, and then this is the code right here. That's it, handful of lines of code to do the authentication. The Azure Active, the Active Directory, the authentication library takes care of all the plumbing, and to get it into the application, all I had to do was go get it as a NuGet package. Here it is, Azure Authentication Library for Windows Store Beta. Add that, and then write a handful of lines of code. Then I have to go out to set this up, I had to go out to the Graph Explorer out here, sign in. So there's obviously some administrative stuff you got to do. And then add permissions for the client app and the service, and that's all you need to do. Set it up, handful of lines of code. There's some more code that went into the service. I'm not going to show you all that because it is in this walkthrough, but it's very, very easy to do. And now think about the scenario. So you ask yourself, oh, that's really cool. When am I going to use that? So think about this scenario. Let's switch back to the expense report app. So here's the scenario. All right, it's the weekend, going shopping. So I'm sitting in the mall, my wife's trying on clothing, and I take out my RT device. The store has Wi-Fi happily, or I'm sitting in Starbucks. And I start it up because I'm going to go check on the baseball scores, and I see the app, the expense app, tells me, hey, there are expenses you haven't expensed, and by the way, it's the last day of the fiscal year. You better approve those. So now what I do is I tap on that, and because I have Wi-Fi connectivity, I go out to the Azure Active Directory, I log in with my domain credentials over the web, get into the app, approve the expense reports, log out, and get the baseball scores up before my wife comes out and sees that I'm working. So I'm happy because I got the job done and I didn't get yelled at. The company's happy because I got my job done and didn't need to be yelled at. This is a very, very cool feature. Vittorio Bertocci has an entire talk on this, so I highly recommend you check that out. But this is cool stuff. Okay. So, we've got data, we've authenticated users. We might also want to protect the data. There are a couple ways we can do this. The easiest way to do this is to use the data protection provider in windows.security.cryptography.dataprotection. It has protect and unprotect methods. There's a similar class in .NET that's been there for a while, so it's basically a very similar thing. You may be familiar with that. If you need more rigorous protection, Then you can go into the windows.security.cryptography.core namespace, and there is a wide variety of classes there for doing encryption, signing, hashing with both symmetric and asymmetric keys. I'm not a big security expert, so I don't know the details of how all this works, but there's a really good sample in the Windows samples that goes through all of the various options, and you can have 64-bit, 128, 256, etc. There's a large number of things you can do there. Of course, if your machine's domain joined, you can use BitLocker, so you've got protection there. And then what you can also do on the workplace joined machines in Windows 8.1 is take advantage of a feature called selective wipe. And we can make the same types of jokes that we would have made when Steve talked about rapid release, but we're going to move on because this is a family show. Okay, so what is this feature? Basically, what it means is that you get to mark and protect work files so that you can revoke access. What it is a way at the file and folder level of basically saying, as long as the person is joined to the workplace, they can view these files. But the second they're not, we're going to revoke their ability to get to these files. Okay, so you've got protected files limited to one user on the device. Seamless, the user doesn't know until, of course, they can't access the file, which hopefully is not the way they discovered that they've been fired. You've got a local key tagged to the enterprise's internet domain, and there are two ways that this can happen. One is automatically. When you join the workplace, then you have the ability, apps have the ability to protect files. If you unjoin the workplace, then that key is revoked and you can't access files. But what you can also do programmatically is protect and revoke. So in a line of business app that you build, you might in your application want to protect certain data, right? You're writing out files on the hard drive, you want to protect those. And so let's see an example of how to do that programmatically. And this example is taken out of the 8.1 samples. That's the file revocation manager. Okay, so let's run it and then we'll show the code. Okay, so the first thing I want to do is set this up. When I set this up, I'm going to decide where my base folder is. I'll just use the desktop. Okay, so now I've got two files created and two folders. So let's go and see what's in the desktop. All right, so here's revoke sample, revoke target, revoke sample. All right, nothing going on there. They're just regular files. Okay, and I can put some sensitive information in here, and I can save this. Okay, so now what I'm going to do is come back here and I'm going to protect the file. So now the revoked sample file is protected, and now I'm going to protect the folder. Now when I switch back here and refresh this, notice that revoked sample is in green and revokeSample.txt is in green. So that's a little cue that these things are protected. Okay, so now, actually, yeah, so let's do this. Let's create some files in revokeTarget. So I'm going to create a new text file in here. I'm going to create a new Word document, and then I'm going to create a new SQLite file using the SQLite administrator. So revoke target, I'm going to create employees. Okay, so now I have these three files in here. All right, so now let's take a look at the code that I did. So to protect, I'm going to call the file revocation manager, and I'm going to protect async this file, and it returns me a file protection status. Okay, so a single line of code to protect a file. If I want to protect a folder, it's down here, file revocation manager.protect async, pass in the folder. Okay, so now I want to copy the protection
to a file and to the folder. Oops, you need to empty the folder before you can protect it. Okay, that's fine. So let's get rid of these. Oh, the file's open. I should probably exit out of here. Okay, so these are empty. So now let's go back and copy the protection to the folder. So you can only copy protection to an empty folder. But when you first create, when you first protect the folder, any files that are in that folder will inherit that protection. Okay? So to do the copying, same kind of code, file revocation manager. So I read the status of one folder and then copy it over to the other. All right, so a handful of lines of code there. Okay, so now what do we have? We've got this sample folder. I'm going to now create in here an Excel worksheet, which is protected. I'm going to create a document, which is protected. And I'm going to create a SQLite database. And I want to put this in sample. Okay. So any file you create in a protected folder is protected. And of course, I can open this because I now have rights to do this. So now we can get the status, so we can check, and then what we can do is we can revoke. So basically what happens is your app is going to receive an event that's sent down from Intune or whatever management software you're using, which alerts you to the fact that the user is no longer in the workplace, no longer workplace joined, and now when I go to open this, I don't have rights. Can't open this. Sorry, can't open this. I've now revoked my right to view these, and then there's a cleanup in this sample. Okay. So you can use that on WinRT devices to protect files. On the domain joined machines, you're using BitLocker, using the fact that the user had to authenticate when they signed in. On the non-domain joined machines that are workplace joined, you can use this to protect files. Okay, so what I'm going to do for deployment is save that for the end. As I said, there's nothing new. Come up afterwards, ask me all your deployment questions. But what I want to do right now, only 2.5 minutes over, which is not too bad, is hand it over to Fred and Daniel.
Thanks, Robert. Did you? Thank you. Hey, guys, I'm Fred Sampson from SAP. That's Daniel. Huber will be demoing in a couple minutes. Now, I was here at Build last time, and we introduced the first 6 apps that SAP built for Windows 8 and shipped. And that was 6 to 8 months ago, and since then, we've learned quite a lot. And I want to share some of these learnings with you guys today. And if I can, there we go. Okay. So the first thing we spent a lot of time rolling out these apps to our customers, and they told us a lot of very interesting things. And the first one is that it just wasn't enough to take the information they had in their back-end systems and give it to their customers. In other words, it wasn't enough to just tell me who I'm meeting with today if I'm going to meet with a customer. I need to know who that person is, what their profile on LinkedIn is, what they've been tweeting about, and I need to know what customers are saying about them. And that's the kind of integration that we've been asked to bring to these apps. And so as we're thinking about new UIs, new modes of interaction, new things we can do with Windows 8, those are the kind of use cases that we have in mind. You know, customers have a lot of opportunities today with these new technologies, and they're asking us to bring all these together inside the UI so that design use case is getting more and more sophisticated. The second thing that we learned is that the field really has switched away from what we used to think about workflow-centric apps, where we used to draw the flowcharts and so here's how a process works, to more persona-centric apps. And so Daniel and I went out to all these customers with these apps, and we showed it to them, and we wanted them to say, wow, this is great, can I get it today? And they basically said, wow, that's great, can I get a version of this for John, and a version of this for Mike, and a version of this for our order processing guy? And so the world of customization is upon us, and the expectation from users is that these apps are highly customized, and that the use cases are highly polished for each of these individual roles. And we call that persona-centric design. So that's another shift that we've seen even in the last few months. And we'll show you examples of that in just about 2 minutes. The next one is the recipe. And this is sort of very simple. And we start, you know, we do a lot of evangelism internally at SAP. And we start every presentation with this slide. And the first one is what I just talked about. It's interaction instead of process. You know, what does a person need at what time? What is their context? Where are they? And how can we leverage all the features of the device to give them that information? So it's not, again, just enough to go through a series of steps like we would an expense report, but we really need to understand what the user's doing and then bring all the contextual information to them in a way that, in a UI that they can use on the device. We talked about contextualization. The third one is personalization. You know, since we're building apps for individual users, all these users are different, and all their expectations are different. So we've had to learn, and we've had to build high degree of personalization into these apps. And the third one is just great UI. You know, we've seen a lot of screens with tiles, and your tile is going to sit right next to eBay's tile or Netflix's tile, and that's who we're being compared against. And if, you know, if the tile doesn't look as good, if the interaction isn't as good, if the app doesn't perform as well, if it's not as speedy and as smooth and as fluid, users will notice that. So again, we're in the same context as consumer apps, and the user expectations now have risen to the level where if you don't meet that bar, users will not use your app. And that's, again, a lot of feedback that we've gotten. All right, last slide, and then we go right to demos. So the first one, just a few key learnings. That all mobile apps are different. You know, we have customers of very specific use cases, and I'll tell you just about one right now, which is about the pick and pack scenario, right? When you order something on Amazon, sometimes it's robots, but sometimes it's people, right? They'll go into a warehouse and they'll hold up the packing order and they'll pick something off a shelf. Well, if you do that for a while, if you're using a heavy device, your arm hurts. And so these are real requirements that we're getting from people. So we need to use smaller and lighter devices. We've got other folks that want larger devices. So there's really no one all on the mobile use case and on the Windows 8 apps use case. Now, there's a couple more here that are also really interesting. But fundamentally, the one I want to sort of focus you guys on is really the last one. Ultimately, these are productivity applications. They're not games. They're not entertainment. We need to make the UI look as good, but it has to solve a real problem for the user. We have to remove the friction. And one of the things we've been able to do with Windows 8 is to create these beautiful experiences that are both easy to use, but that are also very, very functional. And the first time you see a user look up at an app and say, wow, I can see what my customer's saying as well as what I'm selling to them on the same screen, that becomes really useful, and that's where the user buy-in and the user value comes from. So again, those are the learnings. It's been great. We've got a lot of new apps, and I'm going to hand it over to Daniel to show up to you. So thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Fred. Hi, everybody. My name is Daniel Huber. I work as a program manager at SAP, and I'd like to give you a short sneak preview of our latest Windows Store applications. I'm aware that I'm the only thing between you and your weekend, so I hope I can make it as attractive as possible for you. So the first application I want to show you is called SAP Sales Pipeline Simulator. And this is an app for a sales rep doing a local sales pipeline simulation. And it is heavily using the touch capabilities of Windows 8 and it is a very nice consumer-grade application. So all those bubbles you can see here are sales opportunities. And you can very easily handle them. So you can move them around and you have the two dimensions. The one is the timeline on the bottom, and on the other axis you have the chance of success. So you can very easily do sales performance, changing those parameters, changing the diameter, meaning increasing the opportunity size. So a very nice capabilities to use that, and it's very intuitive. So what you can see at the top of the application is my performance, and to be honest, it's very poor at the moment. It's very close to quarter end, and I only have 45% of my sales quota. But let me look into the opportunities in my pipeline. So this is very promising. If I look at this, I see the main information of this opportunity. And, well, I know this customer very well, so let me move that one to the current quarter.
put some additional hardware into the opportunity, some additional stuff. I might call the CIO and invite him for lunch, and well, I'm done. My performance is quite above 100%, so it looks pretty nice. The only thing I now need to do here is now bring synchronize the data that I have currently changed with my CRM backend. So currently, the data is stored in the secure data vault in the application, but now I just synchronize it with my SAP backend system. And well, sales was never so easy. So pretty nice capabilities here. But let me show you some more things. So what is very important for business applications, and Fred has already mentioned that, is really to make them flexible, adapt them, for instance, to your corporate identity, having theming, branding capabilities, and a lot of other things. And we have prepared this application to be very flexible to adapt to different themes. So let me show you one example. Our designers did a great and outstanding job and created a special version of this application for the Build conference. So here you see the nice picture of San Francisco. You see the SAP logo at the top. You see different colors, and even the shapes could be influenced very easily just by configuration. And so easy it can be to adjust those applications to your corporate identity, to your brand. Isn't this cool? So before I go to the next demo, I just want to give some general experiences and recommendations. So most of our apps, and to be honest, all of the latest applications have been developed with C# and XAML. So we are pretty happy with this technology. And in the meantime, we have a big set of reuse components, and it's very easy for our new teams to really start on that and have a lot of templates. So they are very performing very well and can quickly create some additional applications. We also have a channel or data consumption strategy at SAP in the business suite. So all data are consumed via the Open Data Protocol. And this makes it very easy for our customers and for partners to create their own applications using SAP and non-SAP data based on this Open Data Protocol. What you can also see here is some of the applications that are already available or currently in development. And you also see there are some live tiles. So live tiles is a very nice functionality in the Windows. On the Windows platform, and we really try to use it as often as possible. However, as those devices are mobile in nature, by nature, we always need to consider where does it make sense, where doesn't it make sense. For instance, from a security perspective, imagine this financial apps you see here with this chart and the live tile. This is a real-time chart we brought to this live tile, would bring confidential information to me when I'm here on stage. I think this would be critical, so it's always important to consider where the lifestyles make sense or not. So here you see the live tile with the real-time chart. This is the next application I want to show you. It is called SAP Receivables Manager, and it will be available soon. It is one of our latest big data applications based on our SAP HANA in-memory database. So it gives you a lot of KPIs, data reports, based on the millions of records in our financial systems, and it helps a receivable manager to optimize in financials, to optimize his cash flow. So what is very nice with this application is it follows the tile concept, so you can easily move around those tiles. You can make them bigger or smaller. You can use semantic zoom and all those other things. We have a parallax scrolling, so you can see when I move the application and that the content and the background moves beyond the content. So what I want to do as a next step is I want to create a new KPI and a new BI report We have a lot of templates prepared here, so it's very easy to create a new BI report just with some clicks. I want to see all future receivables within the next 10 days. And just click OK. And there you see a new tile. You see that the color codings, you can do some configuration when it is red and blue and green and all those other colors. So this, you can see that we created a new report based on millions of records just in a few seconds, so very easily. Another thing I want to show you is, let's have a look at this report here. So receivables overdue for more than 90 days. You see here a key value, so more than 7 million are outstanding. And as soon as I click on this tile, you see a live chart directly from our database, and you see some history information and a lot of other things. You also see, for instance, the customers that are currently overdue. And what we have implemented here with a semantic zoom is a kind of analytical drill down. So there are a lot of customers that are currently overdue, but using a drill down, I can very easily put all those customers in a bucket, and I see, based on ranges, which customers are between 5 million and 1 million, what are the ranges, and I can very easily switch between those. So this is a very, very nice implementation of a semantic zoom, and this, I really like those this functionality. The last thing I want to show you is we talked a lot about app-to-app communication in the last couple of days, and most of the apps are really focused on a specific use case and scenario, but you shouldn't lose the big picture, or you always need to have the big picture in mind. So if I want to see this more details about this customer, Bohr & Hammer GmbH, I just select the customer, I launch the customer in the SAP Customer Financial Fact Sheet, and it should now automatically go to the detail page and show me more information on this customer. So, and with the split screen, I have both information at my screen at once. Very nice possibilities here with split screen. I really like this with the Windows 8 platform, that you have everything at once in your, on your fingertips. So this was it from my side. Thanks a lot for that you joined this session. I wish you a very nice weekend, a good trip home. Thanks a lot. Goodbye.
Nice job. All right. Thank you very much, Fred. Thank you very much, Daniel and Torsten. Thank you very much. Who's also from SAP. So hopefully what you've gotten out of this talk are some good ideas for building line of business apps. We focused quite a bit on design, and again, the number one takeaway is that there's a set of design guidelines, and the purpose is to enforce consistency, right? Their number one goal of the design guidelines is to have consistency. So once you know how the weather app works and how the mail app works, you can pop over into any of those SAP apps and you know how they work, because you know how to scroll, you know where the app bar and the nav bar is. So you maintain that consistency. There's not one set of ways app works on the consumer side, one set of ways app, a different set of ways that apps work on the commercial side. It's one way that apps work. And we saw a number of good examples, both in my demos and particularly in SAP's demos, of how you can bring that to bear to your apps and build great line of business apps that are easy to use and that still have all of the full richness, reaching into the back end to bring down all of the same data, but showing it in a much more cleaner way, which I think you'll find makes a more productive app, makes an app that is more geared to what the user wants. This idea of persona-based apps is brilliant. It's not the case that you build an app that just does X number of things. You build the app based on what the user needs it to do and provide it in this fashion, and I think you'll find that you wind up with a better class of apps that better serves the user's needs. This, I think, is what you'll find. And then we also looked at some new things coming that are in Windows 8.1, the selective wipe we saw. We saw also the
authentication library, which works with Windows 8 as well as 8.1. So I hope what you got out of this to end your build conference is another set of really good ideas and things to think about and things to try at home. So that's will be the official end. Thank you very much. And we whipped past deployment, so at this point, since my flight's not till 8:30, I got nowhere to go. Any questions you have, please come up and ask them. And of course, any of your deployment questions, come on up and ask. Thanks a lot. See you at next build, hopefully.